This is Twit.
Story from today. You just filed this right before we went on the air about Tubin and Zoom and the New Yorker. But you actually say it's a perfect example of why we need Section 230. Section 230 has been under assault, not just from the right, but who unaccountably think that it's to blame for the fact that the president keeps getting censored on Twitter and Facebook. But from the left as well, Joe Biden even says we got to take a closer look.
People I know are talking to him about that.
Yeah, I think he'll, I'm sure, I think he'll hear.
And I don't even protect companies. I mean people in government.
But you quote Shoshana Weissman, who said that this is a perfect example of why we have Section 230. In the why?
I mean, do we need to go into what?
No. Just say Jeffrey Tubin in a Zoom meeting did something reprehensible and has been suspended from the New Yorker.
Right. And the idea is basically just that Jeffrey Tubin should be responsible for his own actions, and we wouldn't want to hold Zoom legally liable for what Jeffrey Tubin was doing.
Oh, yeah, it's not Zoom's fault.
Or WNYC, which was the host of the Zoom call. In some worlds, they would also be liable for his.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because they set up the forum in which he did the thing for which he could potentially face some legal consequences. And the whole nature of Section 230 is that it's really just about putting the legal liability on whoever actually did the thing. And in this case, that's Jeffrey, and is not WNYC, and it is not Zoom. And therefore, Section 230 is, that's all that it does effectively, and most importantly, is placing the legal liability on who deserves it, on the person who actually did the action.
I do have to say, Shoshana's piece in the Washington Examiner does have a sentence you don't normally hear in the Washington Examiner. She says this is known as the moderator's dilemma. In terms relevant to the Tubin news, Zoom would either have to allow everybody to show their genitals on the platform or make sure no one did.
Yes, the hypotheticals are
this regulatory burden would likely be crushing to new market entrants who didn't even know this was a possibility. No, who lacked the resources for robust moderation. So, more to the point, she says conservatives who are concerned about Facebook blocking conservative voices don't understand that if without 230, they'd have to be more aggressive, not less.
Yeah. And this is like, I think I want to write a piece probably for later this week or next week that basically says like, hey, Republicans, if you actually got your wish and got rid of 230, everything that you think it would do, the opposite is probably true, because it really like they're mad that certain content is being taken down. And yet without 230, more of that content is likely to be taken down because you're increasing the legal liability for the platforms and they don't want to risk it. So they're going to, be much quicker about taking stuff down.
Yeah.
Or you create the scenario where it says, please hold 5 hours for this tweet while we wait for the next reviewer in the queue to check out your tweet and make sure it's okay.
Yeah, and Twitter and Facebook conceivably could do that, although it seems like it would be challenging. But for instance, I have a chat room that's going right now. If I'm responsible for every bit of content in that chat room, it's going away.
Chat room.
Goodbye, chat room.
Yeah.
I have forums. If I'm responsible for everything posted there, I don't have the resources to moderate that. Goodbye, forums.
Goodbye, live feed.
Goodbye. Show. Well, now with the live feed, I guess I'd be responsible for you guys.
Yes. If I say something just awful and horrible right now, you'd be liable to me.
Let me ask a question. Because if you went on MSNBC and said something awful, couldn't MSNBC be, let's say you said something libelous. Couldn't MSNBC be sued for libel? Or no? Would they be protected by 230?
So that is one area where it is where there is some weirdness, right? In that scenario, yes, MSNBC, if it's broadcasting over TV, could be found liable for libel. There are a bunch of extenuating circumstances in which they might not be, but they wouldn't have Section 230 protections.
It was
they
specifically for internet publishers,
right? Yeah. They would have the protection in some sense for the online stream. And so this is the one area where 230 is slightly, and then, I mean, we could go way deep into the legal weeds about why it's not really that different. But there is a little area where the liability regimes are slightly different between online and offline.
There's another difference, which is that MSNBC is regulated. Well, I guess MSNBC maybe not, because it's regulated by the FCC.
They're not broadcast.
But they're not.
No,
they're
not. It's a public airwaves.
So let's just say NBC, not MSNBC.
So NBC is a different story because NBC is public airwaves, and therefore they're a regulated entity and clearly under the FCC. Though, as of today, the FCC has announced its new theory for why it gets to regulate the entire internet. Also,
that was my segue. Yeah, that was my segue because traditionally it's been considered, well, the FCC has no jurisdiction, right. and Congress, which is the chief and sole responsibility of Congress to tell the FCC what they can and cannot do, what their jurisdiction is, has always said they'd have no jurisdiction over the internet.
Right. Ron Wyden, the co-author of 230, said to Ajit Pai on Twitter, back off, fella.
Yeah.
But the FCC has been doing this for a while, not the 230, but they've been trying to kind of work their way up the stack, as it were. They started back.
With net neutrality.
Started it.
Yeah.
Well, no, net neutrality is okay.
Because they're regulating telecommunications companies.
Yeah, that's a legit thing. But they were talking about apps, and people were getting a little concerned if they were going to go further into apps, which would be a noticeable change for the FCC.
So,
but they didn't do that.
Ajit Pai, October 15th, almost a week ago, said that there is bipartisan support in Congress to reform Section 230, and that the U.S. Department of Commerce, and actually that was the president's executive order, petitioned the commission to clarify ambiguities in Section 230. They were acting at the president's behest. Clarence Thomas, the justice of the Supreme Court, weighed in on this, saying that courts have relied upon policy and purpose arguments to grant sweeping protections to the internet platforms, 230, that appear, he says, to go far beyond the actual text of the provision. So what is the justification that Ajit Pai proposes?
Sucking up to Trump.
Well, besides the fact, well, we know his motivations, but he's got to, we know what he wants to do. He's got to come up with a rationale.
Mike, go ahead.
Stacey, you have an opinion on this.
I was just going to, I mean, because I read the general counsel's statement on why they think they can do this. Is they talked about it coming from the communications. Oh, okay, I can do this.
Communications Act of 1934.
Communications Act from 1934. Then they said, hey, they updated that back in 1996 with, I can't remember that act. And basically the idea is that somewhere in there, they want to, where I'm looking for their, it's Section 509. Is that what it was? Yeah.
So I actually have Thomas Johnson Jr.'s statement. He's the general counsel for the FCC. He says the chairman's decision was consistent with my advice that the FCC has the legal authority to interpret Section 230. Due to the unique interest generated by this proceedings, I have now written this memo so that you can understand it. He says these issues are complex, but our legal authority is straightforward. We have the authority to interpret all provisions of the Communications Act, which includes Section 230. It's in the Communications Act. Is that general point of view supported by legal theoreticians, Mike?
It's complicated is the unfortunate answer. They are correct that Section 230 is part of the Communications Act, and you know, which is almost an accident of history. And if you look at the legislative history, you have both Chris Cox and Ron Wyden saying that they wrote what became Section 230 deliberately to keep the FCC away from having any regulatory authority over the internet. However, it is in the Communications Act, which the FCC has some authority over. Part of the issue, however, is that the FCC has spent, you know, I mean, many, many years now, a couple of decades, trying to insist that it didn't actually have that authority. And in fact, part of the net neutrality arguments are that it doesn't have that authority over, you know, broadband access providers. And so they're sort of flipping every argument that they made. You know, this particular FCC, including this particular general counsel, has made and is still making in court about net neutrality, and they're flipping that on its head and saying, of course we have regulatory authority over websites. And so I actually wonder if this is going to show up. I would be surprised if it doesn't show up in the still ongoing legal fight over net neutrality, because here they are saying the exact opposite of what they're saying in court.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yes. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's a quite... Yes.
And they're claiming they got this from several court rulings, correct? The court rulings around towers.
Yeah, he quotes a number of the D.C. Circuit opinion in the Comcast versus the FCC. He quotes a Iowa Utilities Board in the city of Arlington. There's quite a few precedents.
Well, yeah, because it looks like his precedents are coming from court cases, assertions like tied to the legislation itself.
So, and it comes from the fact that they consider the Section 230 ambiguous. And so, for instance, the Supreme Court in the National Cable and Telecoms Association versus Brand X Internet Services, the FCC may, this is the Supreme Court, may act as the authoritative interpreter of ambiguous provisions in statutes that it administers. Of course, he does in fact mention that Congressman Cox said we do not want to create a bureaucracy regulating the internet. That's why we're doing this. But he says doesn't matter because we have the right, to do it. I think some of this is going to be up, much like the DOJ lawsuit against Google might be up in the air, because we've got an election less than 2 weeks away. And there'll be a new Congress in a month or two. There'll be there may or may not be a new president in January. Some of this may be up in the air, right? I mean, Congress is the ultimate arbiter of what the FCC can and cannot do.
Right, but you're going to see regulators trying. Normally, in the Trump world, regulators would try to take away every bit of regulation they could before January.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And So in a normal time, like before Trump, let's call it, yes, an election would change things a little bit. Like you might see agencies deprioritize things, but you rarely would see them like wholesale about face on something. The current Justice Department, though, is very unique compared to others. So it is really... Like here, the election actually has a lot of big consequences for things like this, because I do think we'll see emphasis shifted. Although there are the attorneys generals of several states who are still trying to sue. Yeah. So we'll see where that's totally different and might still be relevant.
Can I make one more point on the FCC jurisdiction arguments here over why they think they have the authority over 230. You know, we mentioned they named all those different legal cases, which, you know, makes it look like they have some legal backing for what they're doing. If you look at the details of every one of those, every single one involves a common carrier situation that they're regulating. And the assumption among pretty much everyone that I've ever spoken to on these things is that the FCC's authorities regarding communications only applies to common carriers. So mm-hmm. what they're really doing here in claiming Section 201 gives them authority is to effectively claim the entire internet is a common carrier without going through the process of actually proving that, which is part of what had to happen in the net neutrality fight. So they're among other things, among going back on everything that they said before and completely revamping the way that everyone has kind of viewed the FCC's authority going back effectively forever, they're also skipping a bunch of the normal procedures that they would go through in order to define a regulated entity. So it's a really bizarre move by the FCC. And I think it's also one that they might actually regret if if the presidency changes, in a couple months, and also if Congress changes, because they're making these statements now that they would not be happy if there was a Democratic FCC who was making the same arguments about regulating websites.